The Infrastructure and Tourism Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Ms. Sabrina, please call the roll.
Chair Williamson.
Here.
Vice Chairpersons Maluka. Representatives Arrington.
Here.
Bell.
Here.
Cheney.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Harding.
Here.
Ranking Member Hart.
Here.
Representatives Lamarca. McFarland.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Placencia. Romo.
Here.
Silvers.
Here.
Salzburg King.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
All right, we have a quorum present. If you have an electronic device, please make sure you turn it off or to vibrate. We're going to get straight into today's agenda. First of all, I'm going to give you the weekly reminder that we're going to take up the consent agenda on project bills today, but we'll do that after the presentation. That way, if you find a project on there that you would like to vote against, you can fill out the no form, the nay vote form, and get it to Ms. Sabrina here, and we will take up that after our presentation. Today, we have Division of Emergency Management that's going to discuss their budget requests related to the warehouse management and emergency storage. We had questions about this last week. They've been gracious enough to come with a more detailed request. And, you know, if you recall from last week, it's approximately $92 million of funding that we're talking about. So it's a very substantial investment. So we want to make sure that we have a clear understanding of this issue. We have Mr. Kevin Guthrie, the Director of Division of Emergency Management. Mr. Guthrie, thank you so much for being here today, and you are recognized.
Bert Chair, thank you very much, and happy birthday to you. You're welcome. Vice Chair, I see she's not with us right now, but Ranking Member Hart and other representatives on the subcommittee, please allow me to thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm looking forward to providing an in-depth presentation on the division's needs for additional emergency storage services. Sorry. So, in the Freedom First budget, the governor has recommended $92.6 million in this budget year. On this slide, I want to provide a quick overview of what we're going to talk about today. First, you'll see that there is the division is requesting $10.5 million in temporary warehousing needs. Second, we're asking for $75 million to support a total of three warehouses strategically placed in the state. Next, you'll see that we have $6 million in is for advanced inventory management contractual services. And then finally, we have $1.1 million for additional warehouse personnel to staff the three warehouses. Currently, the division maintains the State Logistics Response Center. And that, if I end up saying SLRC, that is what I'm referring to, which serves as our primary warehouse and three warehouses through a partnership with Florida Department of Health. So again, just to be clear, we have our warehouse in Orlando, the State Logistical Response Center, and then we have three additional warehouses through COVID with the Florida Department of Health. All of these warehouses contain the state's current food, water, and PPE supply. To prepare for the three requested warehouses, the division would need to maintain the three temporary storage facilities prior to moving to the permanent warehouses. The $10.5 million will support costs for three temporary storage facilities. I was asked a question yesterday by staff, and I will go ahead and reiterate it here. We would not move out of the warehouses we are currently in. This is, we would stay in the three warehouses we're located at, and we would extend those leases and then move when we get the three permanent warehouses. This $10.5 million includes rent, utilities, security fire systems, warehouse equipment rental, such as forklifts, lift jacks, and things of that nature, our janitorial services, facility maintenance to include pest control, elevator maintenance, generator maintenance, insurance, postage and mail that we would have to have as we obviously ship stuff out of that location, and then our IT costs. We used this $10.5 million number to ensure continuity of operations while we transition into the requested warehouses. I will tell you that we currently at our State Logistical Response Center, we average about $3.5 million a year in all of these costs. So when we came up with the $10.5 million number We took the cost of the State Logistical Response Center, $3.5 million. We multiplied it by three, and that's how we came up with our $10.5 million number. Governor DeSantis' Freedom First budget recommends $75 million to build or retrofit three new warehouses to meet the state's long-term emergency storage needs. Based on current and projected supply, the division determined that three warehouses can reasonably fit all of our warehousing needs. New facilities will be strategically located throughout the state so that we can quickly deploy resources during an emergency. I know I'll probably get the question, we have very superfluously identified the Panhandle, Northeast or North Central Florida, somewhere perhaps South Central Florida for those three geographic locations, but nothing has been set in stone as to what actual physical county or city we might be in. Later in my presentation, I'll go into detail about how the State Logistical Response Center warehouse does not have enough capacity to house our current supply. In order to build or retrofit a warehouse, the division has broken down the total ask into seven potential costs: building cost, HVAC or high voltage air conditioning, electrical and plumbing, solar power, IT infrastructure, office space, and generators for each facility. The division is prepared to begin the process for acquiring these warehouses immediately. On the next slide, we'll talk about the inventory management contractual services. $6 million of the total ask for warehouses will go toward an inventory management contractual service solution. This is to maintain accurate inventory, warehouse staff hand, to maintain accurate inventory today, as you see pictured there with two of our National Guardsmen, warehouse staff have to hand count items with pen and paper and enter that information into an ongoing Excel spreadsheet. As you can imagine, that's very time consuming. In Hurricane Michael and in COVID, we had over 100 National Guardsmen assigned to the warehouse to help out with these activities on a day-to-day basis. Right now, the division has two full-time employees staffing the State Logistical Response Center on a day-to-day basis. Because of this and the extensive inventory process, we typically only get a full inventory count about twice a year, which can delay how quickly we deploy resources during a disaster because we need to make sure we have an accurate count of supplies when we start. Additionally, due to only having two employees in the warehouse, the division relies on the Florida National Guard, again, as you can see in that picture, to perform inventory checks at the end of each and every response. This outdated system, by decades, I'll add, creates challenges in having an updated, accurate inventory count. This ask will allow the division to transition to a new inventory system that eliminates the need for paper and pen counts. Additionally, the system will allow us to cross-communicate between warehouses, because it will be on the same system, maintain a virtual warehouse for field warehouses. So let me take a moment to explain that. When we have a disaster, we will often, or I shouldn't say often, we will always have what's referred to as a forward staging area. We will move closer to the area, usually at an airport. For instance, in Hurricane Michael, we had our forward staging areas at Mariana Airport in Jackson County. So this will allow us to do a virtual warehouse wherever we set that forward staging area up to account for items coming into the area and moving into the disaster-prone area and then back out for the purposes of billing and accurate inventory counts. The last thing it allows to do is enter and track expiration dates. The first day this management contractual service is implemented, it will be equipped with software, hardware, which will include scanners, printers, label printers, shipping papers, bill of lading, scanning capability, and an initial inventory of everything that we have in all of our warehouses. Again, I want to say that's included in the contractual services. That alone will reduce the extensive inventory burden from our warehouse staff and allow them to focus on maintaining the resources and the building. On our next slide, we'll talk about additional warehouse personnel. The next slide describes how the division would use $1.1 million for additional warehouse personnel. Like I mentioned earlier, we have two year-round employees for one warehouse. With the $1.1 million, we'd like to increase the total to 12 warehouse employees, assigning four employees per warehouse. For each warehouse, the positions would be one warehouse manager with three general staff. Additionally, at least one of those general staff members would have a commercial driver's license, Class A, to transport resources between warehouses or down to affected areas. I want to take a moment to share a story on why warehouses and warehouse employees are so vital. On July 17th, 2019, Broward County reported a water main break to the division and requested bottled water for their residents until their main water vendor would be able to provide support. Under an executive order, typically, the division would be able to mobilize resources from the Orlando warehouse immediately due to additional staffing from the Florida National Guard. In this case, we did not have that. This was a non-declared disaster. We respond to approximately 75 non-declared disasters a year, including the outbreak of seven tornadoes in the state of Florida just this last weekend. With two warehouse employees in this Broward County example, we were entirely responsible for mobilizing those resources, two individuals. Neither of these individuals possess a required license to transport those products on a no-notice or non-declared disaster, even for a declared disaster for that matter. Ultimately, the support to Broward County took longer than anticipated. The division was required to coordinate with vendors and nonprofit organizations to move our own resources from the warehouse to the area of impact. In the end, the division supplied more than 10 truckloads of water to the county, although it took twice as long to get it done. A more recent example, as I mentioned earlier, of needing to move resources during a non-declared disaster were the tornadoes that we experienced this last weekend in the Vice Chair's area. If the state needs to move state commodities, currently we are required to request funding and then source a vendor to provide that transportation. This creates considerable delays in our ability to support your constituents and our residents throughout the state. From what we've learned from past disasters, more staffing and support per warehouse is necessary to ensure proper inventory, coordination, mobilization of resources, and last, safety. You probably go to a warehouse every week, Costco, BJ's, Sam's, etc., where you see teams working in tandem on forklifts. And that's not just because the people that are in the warehouse, that's because that's a safe practice. Several years ago, we had one of our stacks or the racking system collapse in our state logistical response center. Had our two employees who work in tandem been underneath that rack when it collapsed, it would have killed them, and we may not have known about it for weeks. So again, having four people will allow us to have two different sets of two teams. Now that I've given detail on each part of the overall emergency storage ask, I want to discuss the division's current emergency storage capacity and how we're using storage facilities. As I mentioned earlier, the division currently maintains one long-term warehouse in Orlando and three temporary warehouses through a partnership with the Florida Department of Health. These three warehouses were initially brought on during the state's COVID-19 response to store PPE for distribution. The State Logistical Response Center's primary function is to house immediate food and water for the initial 72 to 96 hours after the onset of a disaster, until additional resources from the private sector or federal government become available. In order to maintain the PPE acquired during the state's COVID-19 response and our other resources, we currently have a total of 544,551 square feet in warehouse space. Our goal is to get that to 650,000 total square feet of warehouse space through the three proposed warehouses. As you can see on this graph, each warehouse contains either PPE, medical equipment, food, water, hurricane support material, and other response equipment. Most of our warehouses are between 80 to 100% capacity, fluctuating based on resource requests. In my next slide, I'll go into detail, but I also want to point out that these warehouses are at 80 to 100% capacity. That's with less than what is recommended under Senate Bill 2006. It's also important to note that the three warehouses in Lakeland, currently in Lakeland, Dade City, and Tallahassee, are funded through a federal grant received by the Florida Department of Health and are not permanent facilities. I also want to point out on this particular slide at the bottom under proposed capacity that we have estimated through our finance department, our chief of staff, that the warehouses will pay for themselves in less than 16 years. To put that in perspective, we went into the State Logistical Response Center in 2007. It is now 2022. So we are approaching very quickly that 16-year mark of where we have been paying leases for the last 15 years. As I go to the next slide, you'll see a lot of red numbers in that right column, which indicate deficits. So last year, the Florida legislature passed Senate Bill 2006, which requires the division maintain a stock of personal protective equipment. To make additional space for PPE storage requirements, the division may need to reduce the current supply of food and water. Again, I'm going to read that again. To make additional space for PPE storage requirements, as you see many of those deficits there, we would actually have to reduce the current supply of food and water to make those accommodations. PPE is not just for pandemics. Under Senate Bill 2006, the division is required to store different types of PPE needed. Biological incidents, wildfires, floods, debris management, nuclear and radiological PPE, and what we typically have today, medical-related PPE. I will say that nuclear, radiological, biochemical PPE is very expensive. And at this point in time, the division has no PPE in its warehouse or in its coffers for that particular type of response. Due to the lack of existing storage space, the division is currently at a deficit of recommended PPE supply, as you see there in just about every category except coveralls. More important than the storage of equipment is the ability to deploy it. This requires dedicated staff to maintain the equipment loaded into trucks, receive new shipments, and track deployments. Additionally, there's different challenges with storing PPE and other pandemic equipment. The resources require certain temperature controls, space requirements, and ongoing routine maintenance. So let me give you an example of that. Food in our warehouse must be stored at below 80 degrees. So therefore, every one of our warehouses must have air conditioning. Water, same thing, mid-70s. Ventilators, which is a very technical piece of equipment, must be charged, and they must be stored also at room temperature. As I transition to the next slide, I also want to address something I may get a question on. As I mentioned earlier, a primary reason we have a deficit in PPE is because we don't have anywhere to store it. As you can see on this slide, these figures are estimates based on our peak PPE levels during the response. During that time, our peak response time, the division had three additional storage facilities, one in Broward County at the Panthers Arena, one in Duval County at the old Regency Sears building, and one in Miami-Dade County in Medley. Those additional sites housed a total of 400,000 square feet of PPE. In addition to that, we had the Miami Beach Convention Center, which is where our 450-bed 450-bed field hospital was set up in the convention center. we had storage of about 50,000 square feet in that space for PPE that was going to be used in the convention center. All of that said, maintaining compliance with the new statutory requirements may come at the expense of the division's core capabilities and missions if additional capacity is not secured. I also want to take a minute to discuss our current warehouse space deficit and why it is so important that we increase capacity. This slide has an overview on the division's current warehouse space needs and our proposed warehouse space needs. To simplify it, we base these numbers on the chart of one pallet of resources and the current space within the State Logistical Response Center. A pallet requires 13.3 square feet of storage space. We have been asked, how do we come up with the numbers? We took the total number of pallets that we have, the total number of pallets that we would have if we built out to the Senate Bill 2006 30-day requirement for storage, and that's how we came up with our numbers. We've also categorized the four different resource groups here and listed them in order of priority with their space needs. So if, again, for this exercise, if you ask me to, Kevin, what is most important, this is what our priority would be. Group one, food and water. Our life sustainment needs and must remain the top priority. Group number two, all hazard resources are resources that can be used in all disasters to include pandemics and are the second priority. In group three, we have put response vehicles and heavy equipment are still hazard resources, but historically, we have rented that equipment from vendors. Group four would then be our PPE and pandemic-specific resources. These are specific to a single low-frequency event. However, as you can see in this on this chart, PPE takes up nearly half of the usable warehouse space. As the summary shows, the division does not have sufficient warehouse capability to store the resources currently on hand. This alone demonstrates a need for increased warehousing capacity. We are unable to store our current resources in the State Logistical Response Center, which is already under the recommended supply. As it stands, the division does not implement a permanent solution. The division may have to surplus or otherwise dispose of critical response equipment we no longer have space for. This means the state of Florida will lose response capability and capacity for future emergencies. Through this ask, we're confident the proposed warehouses will allow us to continuing serving Floridians and ensure we're able to respond quickly during a disaster. As I get ready to go into my conclusion, Chairman, the division is currently housing 30, you know, our goal is 30 days of personal protective equipment and about 72 to 96 hours of food and water. FEMA's recommendation for personal protective equipment is a 60-day supply at our peak point. So I would just go back to this slide and say everything that's in the red column would at least double if we took FEMA's recommendation. That concludes our presentation, Chairman. Thank you for allowing me to present before you today. The Florida Legislature has been an incredible partner in securing funding that we've needed in the past, and we look forward to working with you on this project and many more in the future. We're prepared to answer any questions and provide additional information. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Guthrie, for the explanation, and thank you for, after some of my questions last week, coming up with this presentation, diving in deep. I certainly have a lot of questions. I can't speak for the rest of the committee, but I want you to know, you know, up front, the reason, you know, to have this in-depth dive, this is a lot of funding. This is a lot of money, $92.6 million when you add everything together. And the purpose of today is not to say that this is not a valid use of dollars, but the purpose of today's committee and the questions that I'm going to have after looking through the slide before here and then some of the things that you said during the presentation is to kind of dive into the mindset of how we came up with these numbers to make sure that they are the appropriate amounts, that maybe it's less money that could be spent here because the funding that's spent here, it's going to take away from other things that we also deal with in this committee. So my purpose for questions that I'll have today is really to do a deep dive into just the processes of how we came up with to make sure that these are the appropriate amounts. When you look at this presentation, I think the key elements that you have is you have the warehouse storage facilities at $75 million. You have the warehouse management services at $7.1 million, which includes the 12 FTE. And then you have the warehousing space, the leasing at $10.5 million. And then we talked about the statutory requirements that you would have and so capacity for PPE. So those are kind of the four major elements of the presentation. So what I would like to do is us kind of break that down into when it comes to questions, let's tackle them one at a time. I think that would be most appropriate. So I guess we'll start out with the largest, which would be the $75 million for the warehouse storage facilities. The questions I have about that is, so it says to construct or to acquire new storage facilities. Can you explain to me a timeline if you were acquiring an existing facility and you were retrofitting that existing facility versus what a timeline would look like if you were building a new warehouse?
Sure, thank you for the question, Chairman. So let's start with construction first. So construction would obviously not happen in 12 months. What we intend to do, and I think you'd like some of this detail, so I'm going to go ahead and offer it. During COVID-19, during our very first probably 6 months, I'm going to say 6 to 9 months, we were taking in a lot of PPE, a lot of test kits at that point in time. It was not germane to Florida. This was a nationwide problem that warehouses were running out of space. You know, emergency management agencies' warehouses at the local level, as well as the state level, and even the national level, were just running out of space. So this was not something that was a problem specific to Florida. It was happening all across the country. At that point in time, we had a handful of vendors, 5 to 6 vendors, that submitted unsolicited proposals to the division on how they would solve those critical warehousing emergency needs. So when we went through this exercise, Chairman, we went back to those proposals that were submitted. Now, we never engaged them. We decided to do warehousing ourselves with the Florida National Guard. We went out and got a couple of temporary leases, like I told you, in Dade City, Lake Lander Regional Airport, and here in Tallahassee. And we decided to take on that burden ourselves and try to do it ourselves. When we started going through this exercise to come up with a $75 million number, we determined that we were going to put out an RFP to the private sector, to the individuals that are in this business. And we are going to give them the option to either A, build, or B, retrofit what is referred to as gray shell warehouse space. Gray shell warehouse space is you see it all the time going up and down I-75, I-10, I-95. These are warehouses that are constructed with a big sign out there, up to 1 million square foot available, right? So those are gray shell buildings that have been built, not necessarily custom built, but they have been built to house stuff. So in our RFP, we want the industry to come back to us based on the $75 million number, which again is an average of what the 5 to 6 vendors gave us unsolicited proposals on that we went back and reviewed. We're going to let them come back to us and tell us gray shell's best, or we're going to construct it. Now, construction, you know, as we talked to our DMS sisters and brothers, they have told us it's probably going to take us about 2 years to get a warehouse built from the ground up, if that's what has to happen. For gray shell, our vendors, again, in their unsolicited proposals, said that they could convert gray shell warehousing in a matter of months, up to 9 months, just depending on the type of retrofits that we would ask for. So for instance, air conditioning, generation, things of that nature, they felt that they could do in no longer than 9 months. So to answer your question, Chairman, I know that's a very long answer to it. I think our preferred methodology would probably, and lower price point, would be convert grayscale or grayshell warehousing to permanent versus constructed. It would certainly help us get into that warehousing, get out of the lease we're in Orlando, which is, again, running us about $3 million a year, and start allowing us to save some money.
Okay, thank you for that. So 2 years would be a warehouse that is built, constructed new, up to 9 months for a conversion. And I understand I work in construction, so you have weather that is part of it. You have getting materials that's parts of it. And then with a remodel or a retrofit, how extensive is that? So, but we're saying up to 9 months, as little as a few months.
Yes, sir.
So you talked about talking to our people, unsolicited ideas on what could be done, but you're asking for a certain amount of dollars, $75 million. So if you don't know if you're going to retrofit versus build new, how do you come to the conclusion of $75 million? What was that cost based on? And then also you're looking at different areas of the state. Right. And you're looking at areas of the state when you compare something in the Panhandle area versus something that would be built in Central or South Florida, construction costs, labor costs, everything is going to be different across the board. So how did you come up with the number of $75 million not knowing whether we're retrofitting or whether we're building new?
Sure. Again, good question, Chairman. And to that point, we took the average cost, highs and lows, of the five proposals we received and came to the median number, which was about $75 million. So that, not having put this out for RFI, invitation to bid, invitation to negotiate, RFP, RFQ, we had to come up with a dollar number. And right now, if I go and talk to the industry about that, I forfeit them from being able to bid on that particular contract, as you're very familiar with in your profession. So what we did is we took what was given to us in unsolicited proposals and came up with an average median of what that number was, and that's where we decided on $75 million.
Whenever they had numbers that they gave specific to what costs would be, what did they look at different parts of the state? Like, were these numbers did they all come in thinking that this would be built in South Florida, or did the numbers come in that these would all be built in the Panhandle, or did they cross-reference and show you the differences in what something might cost across the state?
So, again, we had anywhere from 3 to 4 warehouses offered up by each individual vendor. I remember distinctly we had a vendor that stayed everything north of I-4. So again, you're looking at that particular proposal had something around the Columbia, Suwannee County area, Gadsden, Jackson County area, and then potentially another set of fiscally constrained counties like over towards Hernando, Citrus, Dixie, something like that. They were staying where the rent would be low. We had another vendor that said, I'll put stuff in low rent areas or low construction cost areas, and one in South Florida. Now, I will tell you, as the director for the Division of Emergency Management, I get concerned starting to put a warehouse in a Miami-Dade County, a Broward County, anywhere south of Lake Okeechobee. Those are our highest risk areas, right? When it comes to weather, those significantly provide us some risk problems. If we went to, say, north of Lake Okeechobee, like South Osceola County, South Okeechobee County, now we're talking about a potential South Florida warehouse that would be in that geographical region. Many of the vendors that gave us unsolicited proposals did select some of those counties. So again, we went based on what we knew we needed 3 to 4 warehouses. At that point in time, we were inside of 7 warehouses. Again, the State Logistical Response Center, the three warehousing locations I mentioned in Duval, Broward, and Miami-Dade counties, and Lakeland, Lunder, Dade City, and Tallahassee. So they saw that we were geographically displaced. We thought that that was the best practice to, you know, diversify where we put our equipment across the state. But again, every vendor came to us with multiple options of where they would put this. Again, one vendor had stuff as clear all the way over into Okaloosa County.
Do you have a specific time frame as far as the RFP that will
sure.
go out?
Sure. So as I mentioned to your staff yesterday, we are prepared to start putting an RFP out on the street as soon as the end of January, start of February. And it would say pending legislative appropriation. So again, if the legislative body does not give us that appropriation, we would cancel the RFP. But we feel like we should certainly take advantage of the time frame between now and June 30th to go ahead and start trying to get done what we can on this RFP.
So generally, whenever, you know, looking at projects that I've worked on and been involved in, when you talk about going out for proposals for all the different trades and to come up with a value or a price of what that project is going to cost you, I mean, that's where you learn about how much you need to then go build or finish this project. Do you not think that the basis of the budgetary request should be from those proposals, where we're kind of getting the cart in front, or getting the cart in front of the horse, that we're asking for the dollars now, so then we can figure out how much it's going to cost and build it? What if we get requests back and it's much lower from a budgetary standpoint to finish these projects, and then that's dollars that we could have expended, you know, in other needs that we have across our state? So why are we asking for $75 million, and do we truly know what this is going to cost? Or maybe they come back and it's much more than that.
Sure. So again, DMS has told us getting three warehouses for $75 million is a steal. But they told us to budget $75 million per warehouse. So we did have that consult with them. Again, all of the proposals that came back in, the median range was $75 million. And I will say, Chair, what you're asking is somewhat problematic of state government to begin with. So I would love to put out the RFP, get the information back, say for right now this year. I would have to come back to next year's legislative session. So now my material is at least 18 months old. So then I have to factor in an inflation factor. I have to factor in building cost factor, which you're very familiar with right now, seeing increases of 50 to 75% across the industry in certain items. I believe for what we've got to do, we are facing a situation where we will not have federal funding to fund these warehouses the way we're doing it now. And right now, we just don't have the ability to wait an additional 12 to 18 months to come back before you. That's why we felt it was best to take what we had in those unsolicited proposals, take an average meeting of that, and come back or come to you asking for that ability now. Completely understand what you're asking, but again, doing it the way that you suggested is going to delay us getting into warehouses by at least 18 months.
Okay. I consider it problematic to ask for $75 million and say that these proposals do come back where that can't even build a facility. You're coming back to the legislature in the future to figure out how we can, you know, you're wanting to build three. What if it can't even build one? If that's some of the data that's been shown that this is not enough funding. So, and then that's the purpose of this meeting too, is to find some clear details to make sure that if we're going to be appropriating such a large amount of money, we want to make sure that it's enough, but we also want to make sure that it's not too much to go towards this. So those are questions that I had specific to the $75 million when it comes to the warehouse storage facilities. Are there any other members that have any questions that are specific to that? Representative Rommel, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chairman. Director, maybe you could just clarify with me. So we have a temporary lease for 3 years at $10.5 million, so $3.5 million a year. You're asking for $75 million so the state can build its own permanent structures. Why wouldn't we just continue to lease for $3.5 million a year?
You recognize.
So again, that's $3.5 million for one warehouse. So we would end up getting three of those warehouses. And again, it's just the lease, the operational cost, would cost us now $10.5 million a year. By way of example, on this slide here, based on what we're doing at the State Logistical Response Center, so I'm talking about proposed capacity, this bottom figure, proposed cost $75 million. Dollar per square foot, $7.21. After 16 years, we would get to a point where we would not be coming back to you all as a part of appropriations to ask for additional money to sustain those leases. We could be at a net zero by 16 years.
Representative Rommel for a follow-up.
Great. That $7.61 per square foot is the cost to build, but there's still a cost to operate those facilities over those years. And also there's a lifetime, you know, usefulness in the building too, which probably over a 20 or 30 year period you're going to have to retrofit again. So I'm not sure if that's an exact picture of what I'm trying to see, because I know you're going to have costs to maintain that building every year and operate it also. So that's just a construction cost that you're giving an example of, correct?
You recognize.
That is actually the lease cost. So the lease right now on our state logistical response center is $3 million a year. To your point, valid point, we run about $300,000 a year in operational costs, $200,000 a year in other ancillary costs. So yes, there would be about a $500,000 cost in today's dollars moving in the future for operational costs, but we would eliminate the $3 million per facility per year at year 16.
Do we have any other questions concerning the warehouse storage facilities of $75 million? Representative Harding, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, sir. You touched on it with your back and forth with Chairman, but I still need a little understanding. The regional discussion, where are these? Do we have a location determined? I know we talked about areas that you would have concerns with, but and then, again, I'm just trying to understand how you're going to determine those regions, if you have anything identified, and then how are you going to determine those regions?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Good question, Rep. Harding. Where we're at on that is we do not, we're going to ask for them to be in three different geographical locations of the state. And that's about as far as we're going to go. Because we want, with a $75 million budget, we want that vendor to be able to work within the $75 million budget framework. So we need to let them have that capability to be flexible. But again, we will request that they're in three different geographic areas of the state.
Follow up, you're recognized.
And one more question on the warehouses. Pre-COVID, you know, just 2.5 years ago, is there another use? Obviously, we're talking a lot about the PPE storage for this. But is there another way that these are going to be utilized? If, you know, we move on from the COVID pandemic and we're beyond this, just like 2.5 years ago, we probably wouldn't have been talking about three new warehouses. Can you talk us through the use of these facilities post-pandemic, especially knowing that, like, some of your points previously, much of what will be stored in these has a life, you know, has a limited life. So just trying to understand what these could be used for beyond the PPE storage and the virus.
Recognize.
So again, great question, Rep. Before the pandemic, we were already looking at a situation where DMS, DHSMV, Florida Highway Patrol, DOT, I'm trying to remember another Department of Health. We're looking at ways that they could partner with the division on co-locating warehouse space to consolidate and condense the amount of drain that the budget has on storing equipment. So I would say in a post-pandemic era where we would get rid of that, I think the legislature decides that we can eliminate the PPE requirements in Senate Bill 2006, then, you know, we would certainly talk to all of our stakeholders throughout the state to say, we've got warehouse space. How can we co-locate?
Follow up. You good? Do we have any other questions right now? Representative McFarland, you're recognized, and then we'll go to Representative Cheney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director, I'm sort of struggling a little bit with from to picture. So we've got the three temporary warehouses. Are we going to keep those?
Right. I'm sorry, Chair.
You're recognized. Go ahead. Okay.
So the three temporary warehouses we have right now, again, Dade City, Tallahassee, we call it the name just Plant Street, and then Lakeland Linder Regional Airport facility. We would keep those until we can move into the permanent structure. Now, there's a possibility, Rep, that when we move in, or one of the vendors, maybe it's a selective vendor, says, you know what, that Lakeland Linder Regional Airport, we could actually buy that out, and we can do that, and you can just stay right where you're at. That's a possibility. That may happen, but we don't know that for sure right now. So, again, to answer your question, the three facilities we're in right now, we would stay in until the three permanent structures are done, and then we would transition to move into that location.
Follow up, you're recognized.
On slide 9, you detail the current space needs and proposed space needs and then this deficit. So even with the three new facilities, and I recognize you don't know what those look like yet, but are you still projecting a 250K square foot deficit in the new facilities?
You recognize.
Thank you for that question. Thank you for the clarification. Allow me to clarify this. This is if we stayed where we're at today. All right. Proposed space needs, we're at a deficit on where we would be at today. Current space needs, we're obviously already at a 143,000 square foot deficit. When we go up to the larger locations, the total of 650,000 square feet, then we will no longer have a deficit.
Sorry, I might be missing something. What's the difference between current and proposed?
Chairman.
Recognize.
Okay. So we had to go back to slide number 8 for current to help out with this. So we are currently supposed to keep what's in the right-hand column. I'm sorry, recommended supply in the middle column. We have a deficit there. So when you go to then slide number 9, our current space needs, again, I'm going to go backwards one slide, minus what we're supposed to have gives us a 143,992 square foot deficit. If we were to have everything we need in that proposed space, we're now at a 215,000 square foot deficit. Does that make more sense?
Yeah, Chair, if I may try to repeat that so I make sure I understand it. So that 250K is if we had inventory levels to where they ought to be.
That's correct.
You have another question in there, Representative? You're recognized.
This $92.6 million, is there, are some of those dollars hidden in there for to get us up to the proper inventory level, or is that a separate request?
You're recognized.
So we knew this question was coming. So in our initial August budget, LBR, if you were to dig all the way back to that, you would see a $17 million request to bring us up and meet that deficit. So as a decision was made to go ahead and move forward to try to get a warehouse, we eliminated that from our budget. No sense in trying to get more PPE that we already cannot house, right? So we cut that from our budget, went down the path of getting the warehouses. So once we get the warehouses, then we'll revisit, do we go ahead and go to 30-day supply? Do we go to FEMA's recommended 60-day supply? Or does the legislature provide some direction and say, we want you to keep X number of days of supply? I will tell you, one of the things that we struggle with today is we're proponent and support of Senate Bill 2006, but what Senate Bill 2006 did not give us was what type of level of supply should we be maintaining? That was absent from that bill. So we went with FEMA standard, which was 60. We thought that was just way too much. So we cut that in half at 30, and that's what we've been working off of the last year. Thank you, Chair.
Representative, you have a question in there?
So we would maybe expect to see that $17 million or whatever it turns into the future for PP inventory plus up. We won't see that request until either 9 months or X number of years to when these three new facilities are retrofitted or bought or built.
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair. So I think you're going to see a varying degree of that. Right now, we have nothing on PPE that is expiring right now. If this was 2-3 years down the road, we're going to have expiring PPE. So the $17.1 million number that we had this year was to backfill the deficit. If this happens 2 years from now, 3 years from now, it's very possible that we have PPE expiring and that number will go up to backfill the deficit.
So the PPE cost that we'll start seeing after this year will be replacement and inventory growth numbers.
You recognize.
Thank you, Chairman. The short answer is yes. However, as a part of our new warehouse program management, we would really like to look at a vendor-managed inventory in our facilities. Again, the reason we would not do vendor-managed inventory in somebody else's facility is we cannot put our hands on it, right? But a vendor-managed inventory inside of our facilities means we have access to it 24/7, 365, but we could partner with a vendor to evergreen that out to where a vendor comes in, as we got stuff that is expiring, say within 1 year of expiration, gloves. Let me wholesale that to the medical sector and backfill in that case. That's the preferred methodology that we really like to look at when we get to managing the long-term aspects of our inventory.
So the inventory management, the $6 million for—sorry if we're going off topic here, Mr. Chair, but the inventory management contractual services, that $6 million would only apply if we— if you build the three facility, would it not apply to the gray shell?
Chairman.
You recognize.
So the $6 million would apply to gray shell or permanent structure. That is our software to manage the inventory as it comes in and comes out.
Yep.
Representative, you have another question? You want to think about it a little bit when we come back to you? Representative Cheney, you're recognized for a question.
I think the general focus of my questions were answered.
Thank you, Representative. And I felt that we could kind of take these in categories, but it's so intertwined, and a plan doesn't always work the way that I think a plan's going to work. But I do have a question that stemmed from some of the conversations that have been had. Do we have an adequate supply on hand right now for PPE?
So, Chairman, I'm probably going to sound like a bureaucrat when I answer this. We have an adequate supply based on definition of adequate. So if you ask me, is it adequate for 30 days? I will tell you no. If it's adequate for 60 days, I will tell you no. If you ask me if it's adequate for 14 days, I'm probably going to tell you yes. But again, what we're dealing with right now, in the absence of standard, the only standard that is out there is a FEMA memo that says states should carry a 60-day supply.
So what methodology do you use to decide if we need a 15-day supply, if we need a 30-day supply, if we need a 60-day supply? Because it's not in statute. That's a goal, I guess, that you said. So how do you come up with that goal, that's your goal?
So we, in consult with our deputy chief of staff at the time, and as well as the Department of Health, we felt that a 30-day supply was a good middle road number, not going with the 60-day supply of what FEMA asked for. So, for instance, in the 60-day supply, that would be over 100 million gloves for the state of Florida. Again, as you shake your head, I agree with that assessment. I think that is way too many, right? So we went to 30 days. For food and water, it's very easy. We tell our citizens in a nationwide campaign to be prepared for 3 to 4 days. So that's why we have 72 hours to 96 hours of food and water. That is not a magic number. We look at a region being hit by a hurricane, whatever region that is in the state of Florida, and we say we need 72 to 96 hours worth of food and water. We calculate that based on population of our highest impact area, which would be a Miami-Dade area, Broward County area, and that's how we come up with that number. In this case, the only standard out there is a 60-day FEMA supply. We thought that that was too much. It would be a burden on the citizens. It'd be a burden on the budget to try to house. We would be in 7-8 warehouses across the state, and that just, we did not think that was feasible. So again, we went with a 30-day supply, and that's what we're basing everything on now.
So if a 30-day supply is a goal. And you say we have adequate PPE if we're looking at a 14, 15-day supply. What actually is happening on the ground right now? How does that dictate that? Do we have what we need to have the correct and adequate response for what society, you know, what is happening on the ground, what we need? Do we have that?
So, Chairman, that might be the single best question I've been asked about warehouses. Today, we are meeting demand. We're actually exceeding demand because we are not getting requests from our counties, municipalities. The private sector, hospitals, long-term care facilities have caught up with the supply and demand. We have not, and I'm going to say a little bit of a joke here, we can't give it away right now. We have a weekly meeting, 11:15, with all of our county EMs and county health departments. I meet with the Florida Hospital Association at 12 o'clock on Wednesdays, and I cannot give PPE away right now. So we have got to the point where we're keeping up with the demand, and we haven't had any significant requests for PPE in months.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee. Representative Rommel with a question.
Director, just to follow up to what you stated to Representative McFarland, you said we currently don't use a vendor-controlled inventory system because we're not the owners of the building. Why would that matter?
You recognize.
So I'm going to talk about the vice chair's situation. This last week went with her constituents. Both of my warehouse workers had COVID this weekend. They could not come in. They could not get, we could not get our hands on our food and water had Lee County, Charlotte County, Collier County asked for it. So we had to quickly pivot to the private sector to try to start getting access to that food and water system. And we were going to run into significant delays getting there. We fixed our problem. We fixed it in-house to where we get back access to us. In any scenario, and I think 49 state directors, 4 territory directors, and the tribal directors would agree with me that in any scenario where you give food and water to a private sector vendor and let them store it in their facilities where we don't have access to it on a moment's notice when we need it, is setting us up for potential problems.
Representative Harding, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chairman. And you, on the subject of PPE, one thing you mentioned was the local municipalities and also discussing with the hospitals. And I'm trying to, I guess, understand who's the PPE that we're storing. And this is a bigger picture than just the warehouses and discussion. But, I mean, who are we as the state providing the PPE for? And what I mean by that is, are we facilitating it through the municipalities, or do we have private entities and private hospitals that we're providing PPE for?
You recognize.
Chairman, thank you. And Representative Harding, I'll make that the second best question that's been asked for. So we were instructed through FEMA and the governor's office when we were in the height of this to have a supply on hand for the sector. So that means every for-profit, not-for-profit hospital, for-profit, not-for-profit long-term care facility, for-profit, not-for-profit independent living facility, for all government firefighters, all first responders. We were supplying the entire network for PPE.
You have a follow-up there, Representative?
I do.
You recognize?
And it's unprecedented times for sure on this. So some of these questions we're asking, things are going to evolve. And I guess my question to you is, can we work, and I believe in your vision and what you're doing for the state of Florida and appreciate it. And I guess my question to you is, can we work together just to make sure that whether it's now or in the future to ensure that the state isn't being the resource provider and knowing that we have to work within federal guidelines that are going to get handed down. But the last thing I want is the state to be the free provider for PPE for private entities. And I guess my question to you is, can we work together as a body in this legislature with your department to ensure in the future that we can spell out that our role is not to provide private entities with PPE, and it's not our responsibility to store PPE for them, that should be their responsibility. So my question is, can we work together to ensure that we achieve that?
You recognize. Sure.
Representative Harding, over emphatically, yes. We've worked with your team, and I would say your team, the staff of this particular body, over the last several months on this issue. And being careful not to get into opinion, I would say we'd love to work with that to make some guardrails and definitions and appropriate links for what sectors and what other sectors where, again, we firmly believe Senate Bill 2006 is needed. We believe that we should be maintaining a supply of PPE. I think the devil is in the details of the definition of what we're supplying and how much we're supplying to whom we're supplying it to. Yes, sir.
Something that Representative Rommel asked, it kind of intertwines with some questions I had. So he talked about the warehouse management services.
Yes, sir.
If the facilities were built and we had a new system in place, would that system also be able to be used on existing facilities that we have?
So if I understand the question, Chair, so for instance, if DMS has another warehouse, could we utilize that system on that warehouse? Is that the question?
Yeah, could the new facility that's being built and the system that's put in place for that new facility, will we also be able to use that type system and the same system on existing facilities that we already have in place?
The short answer to that question is yes, if that agency, you know, decides to come onto that system. That's where the devil will be in the details, but...
How about specific to facilities that you have in place now?
Specific to facilities that I have, yes, that we will be all on the same system. And if I may follow up on that comment, one of the things that we struggle with in disaster response, if I can do a little plug here, is making sure that everybody that has resources are on the same system, right? For me to know what's over, say, in Agency X, I've got to work through Agency X to find out what they have. You know, when we have a disaster and those agencies come together inside of the EOC, it would certainly be nice to have something similar to state travel management system, where all state agencies are on the same system. Certainly would be nice to have an inventory management system that's, you know, cross-connects to all of our state facilities.
And then also with the management operations, the facilities, it says that whoever builds these projects or constructs these facilities and projects, that they will also be the vendor that does the inventory systems. Or that seems like a very specific niche. Are there a lot of companies that construct facilities that also have management operating systems for inventory?
Yes. So all of the unsolicited proposals that we got, and back during COVID-19, we were asking for what we refer to as turnkey. In other words, we wanted one prime vendor that would take all of the aspects of running that particular type of function and bring all of those resources to bear to do that. So therefore, yes, in the case that the vendors that gave us those unsolicited proposals, they took care of construction, grayscale conversion. They partnered with a subcontractor to provide the resource inventory management. So we did, and that's why you see it as a separate line item. We have had individuals that have come in around median mark, $6 million, to provide just the inventory management contractual services. So that's why you see them as two separate line items in our budget, $75 million and $6 million, in case we decide, you know what, we really don't want a construction company to be doing computer management. If we decide that we want to break that out, we can certainly make it a part of a separate RFP, or we could take the option to combine it.
Okay. It seems to me that if, you know, you look at there, that would probably limit competition if you had specific to build the facilities and have the management systems. When you open up competition in any project, you usually get a better value and a better pricing. I think personally, by separating those, having somebody that builds a facility and then having a vendor list or a proposal for people who can manage it is probably going to give you a better end product. But obviously, that's just my thoughts on it. But do you feel so what you're saying is that is definitely contemplated in this, to have a proposal for building the facility and then have separate proposal for who is going to be the vendor for the operating system of inventory?
Yeah, the short answer to that, Chairman, is yes. That's, again, why we made a $75 million line item and a $6 million line item. And that would give us the flexibility if we wanted to do two separate RFPs and go after a tech company to do tech and a construction company to do construction, we could do that. If we wanted to go down the path, and again, this would be in consultation with DMS, it'd be in consultation with the Florida Digital Service, it'd be in consultation with our own procurement team. If we made a decision to combine it back together, we could, based on those unsolicited proposals, but we wanted to come before you with two separate line items for the purposes of being able to separate those into two different RFPs if needed.
Okay, and then so in the total $7.1 million, six of that's the operations. There's $1.1 million for 12 FTE. Do you think it's a little premature to ask for funding for FTE when we don't even have a facility built for them to have a facility to work in?
Thank you for the question, Chair. Our three facilities, Plant Street, Dade City, and Lakeland Linder Regional Airport, have no employees in them right now.
So would the plan be this FTE, the $1.1 million, that they would work in the, you say Dade City, Lakeland, and is it Tallahassee? What was the last one?
Tallahassee, Dade City, which is in eastern Pasco County, and Lakeland Linder Regional Airport in Lakeland, Polk County.
So the FTE would be used at those facilities until new facilities are bought or retrofitted.
Correct.
And then the other ones will be brought offline, and then those FTE will be spread across the new facilities?
Yes, and when we hire those FTEs in presumably Polk County, Pasco County, and Leon County, we're going to let them know when these facilities are done, there is a state statute that says a reassignment or a transfer to a new area, you have 28 days to transfer headquarters. So we will let them know when we hire them that there is the potential that they may have to move to another region to staff that warehouse. But the intent here was for us to be able to hire employees to put in our three warehouses that we have right now with no employees.
Thank you, and committee, I'm sorry. Some of the other questions that I had were stemmed from some of the good questions that you asked. Do we have any other questions for our presenter? Representative McFarland, you've been thinking back there for a little bit, and you've got another question. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize if you said this before. Sometimes I apparently need to repeat things. I'm trying to picture what these three new facilities might look like, and maybe it was in the unsolicited proposals that you received, or maybe you've got a vision for this. Would they be on state-owned land? Would they be on land that we buy? Like tell me about the land.
Nice.
So if we had a situation where we were building a facility, then we would certainly look at to DMS for looking at where do we have state lands already. I will tell you there is one county in Central Florida that's willing to give us land. Right now, actually, we have two counties that are willing to give us land right now to build and put a warehouse in their county. At the end of the day, we would end up owning the land if we go into a gray shell situation or we build in a county. But at the end of the day, it's going to be dependent on where the vendor finds adequate warehousing already, or if they have to build one. And I think maybe the best way to explain that, maybe a little bit further, Representative McFarland, is we know that we need a warehouse along the I-10 corridor somewhere around the Apalachicola River or west that would feed the panhandle. We do not have anything right now. I don't believe there is anything in the 200,000-ish square foot range in that area. So that might be a situation where there has to be a building. Now, there may be, I know that many representatives are from that general area and may have warehouse space, and they know about it right now. We'd love to certainly take that information. We've got to stay away from the coastline. We prefer to be up on the I-10 corridor because it's just about the furthest point inland as we can to get away from the coast. So perhaps a Gadsden, Jackson, Holmes, Calhoun County type thing, we may have to build something there.
Follow up. We're good. Do we have any other questions? One question that I do have about the warehouse spaces. You're asking for $10.5 million. Currently, the leases are at $5.2 million, $3.2 from DEM, $2 million from the Department of Health. Where is the other $5.3 million going to go to if we're leasing these facilities for 5.2 now? What's changing, and where would that be spent?
So we were asked that question yesterday. Again, in my presentation, I said we did $3.5 million based on what we spend now times three. Greg and Eric asked us that question yesterday. We did not have access to the actual lease agreements by the Florida Department of Health, so we made an assumption on maximum dollars they would be doing. In this case, this would be, to your point, Chair, I think you said it was a total of how much?
So asking for 10.5, currently right now 5.2, if you take 3.2 that DEM spends and the $2 million that the Department of Health.
So this would be a line that certainly this appropriations could correct. Again, we made an assumption 3.5. times three based on what we were spending. When we were asked yesterday to go find out what the actual spend was at DOH, we did not have that number. So obviously that number is much lower. So we can, we would certainly recommend an adjustment down to the number that you have in front of you now.
And so I just want to make sure that I'm correct. What was asked for was $10.5 million, but you're saying that the $5.2 million, which is sufficient now, will be sufficient in the future?
Yes, sir. With the only caveat, we would have to look at those leases to see if there's like a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7% rider on next year's lease. So we may need some headroom on that and make sure, Greg, I don't know if you checked this or not, and I'm sorry, through the chair. Does that include the operational costs like the electricity and things like that? So that's the only thing I would say is we can certainly adjust that number down based on the actuals plus a percentage that may be needed for next year's rent.
Thank you for that clarification. Representative Cheney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you unpack what's in the $75 million on the build or retrofit, just like you did for the temporary warehouses for us? You kind of itemize the different expenses. Like, is there an expense to do the RFP, to find the locations? What's in that number?
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. So there's no expense to do the RFP because we will do that in-house with our own staff. So it's not like, for instance, the state EOC that's under or will begin construction. There's no A&E design. There's no, none of that stuff. We're going to handle all of that stuff in-house. So you will not see anything there. But this slide breaks down what that $75 million will end up covering. So again, recapping, it'll have building costs. So again, that building cost may be brand new construction or retrofit. So that's a two-prong type situation there in building costs. Typically, gray shell warehousing, again, existing warehouse that's on the side of the interstate right now, may or may not have HVAC or high voltage air conditioning. So we may have to put air conditioning in. Electrical, plumbing, and any ancillary items that we need. So in this particular area, we will need some high voltage electrical run for below freezing freezers that the Florida Department of Health already has, that we would need to, you know, if we needed to store medication, something of that nature, we'll have to run some type of electrical. We may have to, for instance, for the same freezer example, we may have to run a drain so that we, if that ends up having a failure, it captures the water that would potentially come out of that freezer. And then ancillary items, especially in the electrical area, typically your forklifts, if they're electrical run, have to have a charging station. If we have we have over 1,000 ventilators, those will have to be put on a charger. So again, you can imagine a rack of electrical cords and power strips where we would plug those in at. Moving to the next thing, a whole building solar system. We're really wanting to look into that direction. We are still gonna have to have a backup generator, but these are emergency facilities and they will need to have redundant power. So again, we're looking at we want to look at the solar powered system to help save on monthly operational costs. So we're looking in that direction. The IT infrastructure would be included in that $75 million. Again, any type of network cords we've got to run, Wi-Fi that we have to run, if we had to run, for instance, a satellite phone to that particular building, which we will have to do so that if we do lose cell phone or landline phone, we have the satellite backup. That's a standard on all of our facilities. So that'll be wrapped up in the IT or the IT infrastructure piece. We are looking at cloud environment. We do follow the cloud first environment statute. So I don't think you'll see a whole lot, if any, servers on this site. We'll be looking more at cloud-based storage. office, we'll have to have some type of office with each one of these facilities, as we'll have at least four employees there. I will say that the Orlando facility houses 20 of our mitigation personnel, specifically our engineers and our environmental staff. We're already looking at options for them. When the State Logistical Response Center leaves, DMS has plenty of office space in the Orlando footprint that we can move those true office individuals into an office environment. So we'll be okay there. And we can get that for, we can actually charge those to what's referred to as management cost for our mitigation personnel. That's an allowable federal cost. So we will not need to ask you for any type of office space. conference room, obviously, operations center build out. So what we're talking about is operations center build out is there will, when we activate for a disaster, there will be surge employees that come in here. Whether those come from the Florida National Guard or they come from the private sector, we will have to do operational briefings, get assignments, logistics, and so on. So we will need some type of operations center build out and a conference room there. And then the last thing there is we've already talked about to a certain degree is the whole facility generator. So it will need that redundant backup power.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Guthrie, thank you for coming before the committee today. And we appreciate you spending time. The people of the state of Florida definitely got their money's worth from you tonight. But, you know, we really wanted to make sure, like I said from the beginning, we did a deep dive on this to find out. Again, I'm not saying that it's not a worthwhile expenditure. We just want to make sure that we're appropriating the correct amount of money because we have other agencies and other needs across our state. So thank you for being here tonight. I know that I may have other questions that come from tonight's committee and my committee members as well, and I know that you'll be glad to answer those for me or for them. So thank you for being here, and look forward to continuing this conversation in the future.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate it, and happy birthday again.
Thank you very much. Members, that concludes the presentation, and that moves us to our consent agenda. And I'm going to read through the little script here that you've heard many times, but I always make sure that we do it each time. We're going to take up the consent agenda. We will not vote on each bill individually. We will ask questions, debate, and vote only once on the agenda in its entirety. If you have a no vote on a particular bill that you'd like to submit, make sure you submit a nay vote consent agenda form to Ms. Sabrina. Are there any questions on the process? Seeing no questions on the process of the consent agenda, is there public testimony on the consent agenda? In public testimony, we have Rosanna Catalano. And I probably butchered that. I'm from the Panhandle, so just excuse me. And it's my birthday, so excuse me. Charlotte County Airport Authority waiving in support of House Bill 9111. Julia Yores, waiving in support of HB 3765. Delatry Hollinger, probably butchered that one too, waving in support of House Bill 9013. I got it right. Good deal. Mark Anderson, Nassau County, waving in support of HB 3037. Mark Anderson, waving in support of HB 3043. And Mark Anderson waving in support of HB 3045. Do we have any other members of the public? Okay, seeing no more public testimony. Is there debate? Members in debate? Seeing no debate. Before I call the roll, are there any members who have nay vote forms on the consent agenda? Seeing none, Ms. Sabrina, please call the roll on the consent agenda.
Chair Williamson?
Yes.
Vice Chairpersons Maluka?
Yes.
Representatives Arrington?
Yes.
Ranking Member Hart?
Yes.
Representatives yes. Bell?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Lamarca?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney? Placencia?
Yes.
Romo?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Slausberg King?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, please show the consent agenda passes. All of the bills on the consent agenda will be reported favorably. And just remember that that does not mean they are funded. That just means they are put in posture for that process when we get there. Members, seeing no other business comes before us. Ranking Member Hart, who has been very quiet today, moves we rise and we are adjourned.